What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. My co-host is Thomas Drance. He covers the Canucks for The Athletic as well. He'll be joining me momentarily here. We are broadcasting live from the Kintec Studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And this hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. You need forklifts that perform under pressure and pallet racking that maximizes your space. Visit them online at racksteel.com. So as I said, Drance remote this week, so we'll get him connected momentarily here and joining me on the show. Obviously going to be a bit different this week and for next week as well. The Canucks, of course, played their last game before the Four Nations face-off break on the weekend. So we'll get into that, of course. And it was a very newsy weekend other than that around the Vancouver Canucks as well. But with the NHL break and the Four Nations taking center stage here, and Team Canada was practicing today in Montreal. In fact, all of the teams practicing today in Montreal. It gets going on Wednesday. We're going to have a lot of Four Nations international hockey focus on the show over the next couple of weeks as well. So we'll try to balance it. We'll try to make sure we've got you covered on any Canucks news that comes up, have some big picture discussions, look ahead to the rest of the season, all of that fun stuff. But we'll make sure we're digging in to Team Canada and the Four Nations face-off as a whole as well as it gets going. The inaugural edition of the tournament gets going this week in Montreal on Wednesday, in fact. And to that end, joining us on the show today at 12:30, Greg Wyshynski from ESPN. We can talk a little NHL, you know, at the pause here, a little NHL with Greg, but also look ahead to Team USA. Of course, the Quinn Hughes news that he won't be in the tournament, what that means for Team USA. And at 1:30, Eric Engels from Sportsnet, he's covering this tournament. He's on the ground in Montreal. He was there at practice talking to John Cooper, talking to Sidney Crosby after practice. So we'll get his latest from Montreal and the vibe. We'll do a vibe check around Team Canada ahead of the Four Nations face-off. So that's what's coming up on the show at 12:30. It's Greg Wyshynski from ESPN at 1:30. Eric Engels from Sportsnet. Before we do any of that, though, let's go to the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, February 10th. We'll start with the headlines. And as I mentioned, the Canucks have 2 weeks off almost now for the Four Nations face-off. Of course, the whole league taking this time off. We'll look ahead to what they might get up to, what the league might get up to, and what they have, you know, to accomplish after this break. But before we do that, let's wrap up. And of course, they finished on a high note before the break, beating the Leafs 2-1 on Saturday. A lot of interesting stuff to come out of this game, but I think number one was Elias Pettersson following up his worst game of the season in San Jose with what I thought and a lot of people thought was his best performance of the season against Toronto. To talk more about that, everything else going on, we welcome in now my co-host Thomas Drance. Drance, what's going on, man?
Just enjoying watching you rag the puck as we go through our usual remote connection technical issues. Although I'm really confident about this one.
You sound strong. You sound great.
Yeah. It took a bit, but man, we have arrived.
But we nailed it. We got it right.
Much like Elias Pettersson's form after the JT Miller trade, we're on our game now. It just took a minute. So you thought the Pettersson thing was the place to start?
Yes. Okay. Where would you have started, Demko?
I think Demko just because, man, the implications of this are so enormous given his contract status, given Kevin Lankinen's contract status. And, you know, I mean, let's be, you know, perfectly honest here, right? Demko missed, 10 months?
Mm-hmm.
Effectively played 3 games. After getting hurt, 11 months ago, Demko gets hurt in that game against Winnipeg and works his absolute tail off to get back, plays the final 2 games of the regular season and the first game of the playoffs, and then suffers the knee injury, the unprecedented knee injury, the popliteus tear. And he doesn't play again until December 10th.
Mm-hmm.
And he's now appeared in 17 games for the Canucks, but in two of them he's had to leave because of injuries. And the Canucks have Lankinen, who played great again against the Maple Leafs, who's expiring and is going to be a pretty significant price. Like, he's going to have a significant price tag if you want to keep him. And, I mean, don't you kind of have to at this point?
I think you probably do.
I think you have to keep him. And then what does this mean for Demko, who's been a foundational piece when we've talked about this team for much of the last 5-6 years? But at this point, you know, it is like you have to make a bet now with limited information. This is a player who's 29, right? He's going to be 30 when the next deal starts. And, you know, he's still yet to hit that, has played 60 games in a season, has remained healthy throughout, and has managed an average save percentage in all of those seasons, right? Like, we're at this point talking about a player who, since he took over from Braden Holtby during the 2021 pandemic abbreviated campaign, right, at this point, has averaged, 40-ish games a season, games played.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that includes this year, which isn't complete. He'll probably get up to 30 or so and make that about 45, 47, 48. But given the nature of the injury, given the fact that he's struggled, although it looked like he was rounding into form, you know, a setback right when he was starting to look like himself is hard enough. You feel for the player, you feel for the person. This has to be incredibly frustrating. But from the team's perspective, I just feel like this is such a massive can of worms that keeps getting reopened and has significant ramifications both for how they approach the postseason, how they approach the stretch run, and what they decide to do contractually with two pretty important players between now and the end of the season. So for me anyway, like at this point, anytime Demko leaves a game or gets hurt, whether he plays well, whether he plays poorly, I almost think, I know that our market is so laser focused on Pettersson's form and his struggles and the Miller versus Pettersson of it all and this year-long referendum on XYZ. Mm-hmm. But honestly, the Demko side of this feels to me to be higher stakes given the decision pressure point that like arrives now, that's already here, frankly, as the club sort of goes through a 2-week pause during the Four Nations faceoff.
So the reason I would have the Pettersson stuff higher on the priority list, not that the Demko thing isn't a big important deal by any stretch, but it just feels to me like so much of the uncertainty you're talking about, which does put the Canucks in a really fascinating and difficult position, especially with the Kevin Lankinen thing, but so much of that uncertainty already feels baked in, even if he hadn't left the game on Saturday. You know what I mean? Like, it's very difficult for me, or the likelihood that Demko would have finished the season in such a way that the Canucks were looking at this and saying, all right, we want to commit long term to this guy because we think he's going to be our number one workhorse all-star goalie. Like, that just seems like such a minute possibility. Okay, he left another game early, but again, isn't that kind of baked in with Thatcher Demko at this point? And I get, he always has a chance to change the story if somehow he had managed to, play, 65% of their games down the stretch or something and then look really, really good in the playoffs. Does that move the needle? Maybe. But I just kind of feel like, okay, this is where we're at with Thatcher Demko. And I think the other thing is because there's the uncertainty around his contract status, one more year left after this one, who knows if they'll want to extend him, what that will look like, all of those things, if they'll extend Kevin Lankinen and move in that direction. I can imagine a scenario over the next 3 years, let's say, this year and the next two, where the Canucks are a really competitive team without Thatcher Demko more easily than I can imagine them being a really competitive team without a much improved version of Elias Pettersson. So it still feels to me that Elias Pettersson's performance, in large part because they're already locked in, right, or at least kind of locked into that deal, it still feels like the thing that's going to move the needle most for this team. Now, I think the counterpoint to my argument would be like, well, it's one game. And I came in after the Colorado game and I was like, I'm done trying to like wait. I'm done waiting for Elias Pettersson to turn things around and get back to the old Elias Pettersson this season. now I'm here after the, you know, one good performance against the Leafs. And I'm like, well, maybe, maybe he's back. So maybe it's ridiculous on that front that it's only one game. But it's, we've, how many times have we said it this year? Like, the number one story with this team is, can Elias Pettersson be great? Can Elias Pettersson be a top of the lineup force again for this team? That's still, to me, the number one question about this version of the Canucks. And that's not to minimize the importance of what an on-form, healthy Thatcher Demko can do. We know what he can do. I just think it's not quite as important, as kind of all-encompassing, as earth-shaking for this team as Elias Pettersson's status.
Well, I'm always happy to minimize goaltenders when we talk about
that's
hockey.
Right. You know,
tell Kevin Woodley I said it, but so I'll accept the premise I'll accept your premise whether I agree or not. The Pettersson shift, obviously, with Filip Hronek, mm-hmm. where they combine on what really, when you watch the whole thing unfold, is an incredible give and go. Right? I mean, you know, there's the reverse hit in the corner. Cool. I mean, that's vintage Pettersson. Although he does that whether he's on his game or not. But it's the play at the half wall where he knifes the puck away from Marner and then does a little spin pass to beat two Leafs defenders and get the puck back to Filip Hronek up top. That's a super high degree of difficulty play because it's a true 50-50 puck with another elite forward in the mix, and Pettersson knifes it away from Marner, disrupts his control, and then, you know, controls it and makes a really high skill play and a really difficult one to get the puck back up to Filip Hronek. And then from that point, obviously, Hronek gives it back to Pettersson at the point and then goes hard to the net. Like, Canucks forwards, watch Filip Hronek. Like, please, that's incredible stuff. And they found that seam. Now, one thing that's interesting to me is the Canucks hit that seam again. They spammed that seam again. Mm-hmm. Later on in the period and got another scoring chance out of it. So, you know, as much as it was a brilliant piece of work by Pettersson and some excellent heads-up play from Filip Hronek, who I actually think probably should be the biggest story from this last week, given how he performed in Quinn Hughes' absence and how crucial that was to Vancouver, you know, amassing that 3-0-1 record post-JT Miller trade. You know, I think the fact that there's a combination or a factor there too, where clearly the Canucks saw something exploitable in Toronto's defensive zone coverage and hit it twice in the first period, I think also speaks to the fact that this was a game where, you know, it really did feel throughout like the Canucks, in addition to being a tough matchup for, you know, this stodgy, slow yeah. Leafs team, it also, I think, had their number, was prepared. It was an incredible game from Tocchet too. And now that you've got a team that seems to be buying in, that seems to be bringing some decent work rate night to night, some vibes, we're not worried what we'll see, you know, at least over if this past week is evidence, we know that the Canucks will be working whether they perform well or not, whether it's, you know, it looks more like it did in the three home games or more like it did in San Jose. We're not going to say that it's a work rate issue.
Yeah.
And then that's a huge departure from where this team has been for much of the season. But now that they've got that, now that they've got the mentality and are combining it with, you know, high skill plays from their good players and, you know, a thoughtful approach to how to dissect and attack their opponents. It's like, okay, well, now we might be cooking with something I'm far more interested and keen to watch over the balance of the season than I have been, you know, up to this point.
Yeah, and I mean, they had the game plan and they executed it. And I think that's been the huge issue. Is I'm sure Rick Tocchet and the coaching staff have been trying to find similar things earlier in the season with their opponents. But, and we've even heard Tocchet allude to this, it's just the execution, maybe the buy-in hasn't been there. And he used that word after the game on Saturday. Guys are buying in. They're grinding at wins, as you said. Obviously, San Jose and Tocchet said they weren't happy with their performance. But they grinded it out. They found a way to get the win. And even in Toronto or against Toronto, you know, it's a one goal win ultimately. But again, there was a lot of buy in. There was that effort from the Canucks. You're right to spotlight Filip Hronek as well. I mean, man, he has been. He's been a beast for the Canucks in Quinn Hughes' absence, stepping into that number one defenseman role, playing a ton, doing well. Okay, sure.
I wouldn't say that.
Is it Marcus Pettersson by minutes?
It's Pettersson and Myers.
Yeah.
Like, I think part of what we're seeing here is with Pettersson playing with Myers and that pair, you know, holding their own in really difficult deployment across this like 4-game sample, right? What that's done is allowed Tockett to sick Filip Hronek as like a more offensive-minded driver, which they need because this team's so reliant on those Quinn Hughes minutes to generate offense, right? So Hronik's been the productive guy, the guy controlling play, the guy helping this team generate, which as we know, is their biggest issue, right? Is this team's biggest issue by far, while Pettersson and Myers chase the toughest matchups around the ice. And, you know, like, for example, across this team's last week of games, and granted, it's a 200-minute sample at 5-on-5 and only 72 minutes for Filip Hronek, but within Hronek's minutes, the team is generating 31.5 shots per hour. Well, 31.5 shots per hour for the Canucks is like, oh, baby, like, let's go, because this team generates 23 shots an hour, you know, and closer to 20 in their non-Hughes minutes normally. So for Hronek to have even a small stretch, to have even this glimmer of like offensive sunlight in without Hughes in the lineup, and with Hronek being the focal point for that, you know, I actually think it's not that he stepped into being the number one guy, because he's not. He's actually third in 5-on-5 minutes across Vancouver's last 4 games. It's that by throwing Hronek not into a situation where he has to be a number one, but into a situation where he has to be doing his best to replace some of the offensive generative stuff that Hughes has done, he's killed it. Been like an exceptional play driver, an engine for this team, and they needed that so, so desperately. They need that period so, so desperately, Jamie. So I thought it was an incredible run, an incredible week for Hronek. But I do think there's a tactical sort of wrinkle here that we have to pay attention to, not only because Tockett and Foot deserve credit for it. I think it's a smart way to play it, especially given that the team's, you know, short a few cards in the deck, maybe more than a few, maybe half their deck with Quinn Hughes out of the picture. But also because, you know, I think it shows the importance of bringing in Marcus Pettersson to stabilize their top four. Right. And yeah. I think it's a testament to, hey, maybe Hronek can drive offense even without Quinn Hughes, something that, you know, we just haven't had the opportunity to see very much, given how Vancouver's two best defenders have regularly been attached at the hip.
It sets up some very interesting opportunities for Foot and Tockett, I think, when the team is back after the Four Nations. And you hope that Quinn Hughes will be good to go. And of course, the other news for the Canucks over the weekend is Quinn Hughes withdrawing from the Four Nations faceoff, won't be a part of Team USA for the tournament. And all of the reporting and the comments from his agent as well that we've heard on this are that this was understandably a very, very difficult decision for Quinn Hughes. I'm disappointed for him. You know, I wish he'd been healthy enough to go and you know, not be worried about the after effects and what it might mean for the rest of the Canucks season. I wanted to watch him on this stage, but unfortunately, Quinn Hughes will not participate in the Four Nations.
Hey, this team cannot, given the sacrifice of Quinn Hughes, you know, looking at this season and opting to not take an additional risk by performing at a tournament that, you know, I guarantee you he was thrilled
yep.
to be a part of. Like, if we see lackadaisical efforts from here to the end of the season now from Canucks players, it's like, come on, man. That to me, organizationally, like if I was in Alvin or Rutherford or Tockett's shoes, I would overreact so significantly if I've got a captain and star player making this kind of sacrifice with the team in mind.
Yeah,
because that's very much, you know, especially parsing what Pat Brisson was saying on Donnie and Dolly today. It sounds very much like that was what was up. Like Hughes maybe could have gone. Maybe he misses a couple of the first games, but ultimately decided that playing it safe and getting healthy was more important than taking the risk that he could exacerbate the injury. I mean, I don't even think that's subtext. That's explicitly how Brisson put it. And of course, that's our first glimmer of insight into Hughes's thinking here. That's an incredibly selfless call from the captain, especially with how rare these best-on-best opportunities have been, you know, throughout his prime as an NHL player. That better be paid off. That better be paid off with the team performing far more, far closer in terms of their energy level and form to what we've seen the last week. than to what we've seen over the scope of the full season. I think that would be really hard for the organization to stomach. It certainly will be hard for me to stomach just as a neutral observer.
Next game for the Canucks, February 22nd in Vegas against the Golden Knights. Four Nations starts on Wednesday. Canada will take on Sweden. We'll skip the broadsheet today. We'll go to lineup notes. Now, some quick Canucks stuff here. Linus Karlsson, DPD, defenseman Elias Pettersson, and Neil Zaman all sent down to Abbotsford. Now, Abbotsford keeps playing during this break. I believe they have four home games this week, so those guys can get some action in. It also allows the Canucks to keep accruing extra cap space over the break here. But you know what else we get to do in lineup notes, Drance? Team Canada lines from practice in Montreal today. And this is the kind of thing, like, I've always been hyped for this tournament. I love best on best international hockey. I've always been excited. But I think if you were a bit of a naysayer or maybe on the fence, like, seeing the guys on the ice, seeing the clips of them practicing, the combinations, all of that, to me, this is the kind of thing that should get a lot of people pretty hyped to watch these games. And I'll run through it quickly here for us. So Sidney Crosby, who, by the way, says he's good to go despite missing the last couple of Penguins games and some uncertainty around his status. He's good to go to play Sweden on Wednesday. He's centering Mark Stone and Nathan MacKinnon. Connor McDavid with Sam Reinhart and Mitch Marner. Braden Point with Seth Jarvis and Brad Marchand, Anthony Cirelli, Sam Bennett, Brandon Hagel on the fourth line, Travis Konechny, the other forward. He was sick, didn't practice today. On the blue line, it's Taves and Cale Makar, no surprise there. Morrissey and Parayko, Shea Theodore and Drew Doughty, who steps in to replace Alex Pietrangelo. And it didn't matter, like, not selected for the team, injured for half the season. Drew Doughty was going to find a way to be on this Team Canada, as he always is. Travis Sanheim, the extra defenseman for Team Canada. And the power play one setup, I mean, my goodness, it's Cale Makar running things on the point. McDavid on his one-timer side. Sam Reinhart in the bumper spot. Nathan MacKinnon on his one-timer side. And, oh yeah, Sidney Crosby, net front on the power play, rounding out the top power play unit for Team Canada. So, I mean, I don't know about you, man, but just, like, looking at those combinations, looking at that power play one, that five-man unit, and they're out on the ice working together after practice, I am absolutely hyped for Wednesday against Sweden.
Oh, look, this tournament, whether you're into it or not, the moment you're seeing it actually in real time with the best in the world playing the best in the world wearing Team Canada colors, you know, especially with some of the geopolitical context that'll hang over a Team USA versus Hockey Canada game. I mean, it's going to be thrilling without question. Love those lines. Like, I love Nathan MacKinnon with Crosby and Mark Stone. It's like, what if we put Nathan MacKinnon with two guys who never lose puck battles?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, yeah, that sounds great. Sign me right up for that. So, yeah, really excited. And then, of course, Sweden. Pettersson playing with Adrian Kempe and Philip Forsberg. Like, let's go.
That's nice.
Sounds like an awesome spot for the Canucks star. And I thought Tockett's commentary about what he wants to see from Pettersson, just to see him have fun.
Yep.
Embrace the pressure, right? The pressure can be fun, that he had fun during that game against the Leafs, and that's what they need more of. I thought that was a fascinating insight into Tockett's view of how the player needs to get right to just start enjoying himself again, to start making those plays and sort of welcoming it as a fun challenge and not something more than that. I thought that was fascinating. Certainly he'll be in a good spot to do so here once this tournament begins.
And he will be in action against Canada on Wednesday. Quick playoff standings update here. Canucks enter the break with a 3-point lead on the Calgary Flames in that second wildcard spot in the Western Conference, all the way back up to an 88% chance to make the playoffs per Dom's model. So obviously not a lock, only a 3-point lead, but the model at least evaluates them as heavy favorites to ultimately make the playoffs over Calgary and the rest of the pack in the Western Conference. Anything you want to touch on quickly in the betting odds, Drance?
Just that Team USA has been mostly favored throughout, you know, much of the gambling, much of the futures betting market around the Four Nations tournament. But over the course of this week, and I don't know if it's the Quinn Hughes effect or something more to it, but for the most part, you're seeing both Canada and U.S. listed now as co-favorites, plus 175. Sweden plus 370, Finland plus 640. So that's sort of how the betting odds shake out. Obviously, we'll get into like game specific stuff once the tournament begins. But those are the futures odds going into the Four Nations face-off. Canada and the United States co-favorites, despite the fact that Team USA has largely been favored for most of the year in this marketplace.
That is the whiteboard for today. We'll take a break here. Greg Wyshynski from ESPN joins us next. We'll get his thoughts on the Four Nations. Quinn Hughes out for Team USA. Sidney Crosby in. We'll talk to Wish about that and more next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.